The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kessel. With me tonight to discuss our trio of Denzel Washington movies is Shane Settner.
Yo!
So, as we continue to feel our way through our new format, led by myself in the benevolent dictator role, we're still smoothing out some rough edges at this moment. We are building in each trio and each month, give or take, to a podcast that summarizes and discusses the three movies as they are individually and as they relate to each other. We're gonna refine how we pick our movies. Maybe try and draw some more interest. Like this trio, a little light on the interest, perhaps. It's unclear.
Listen, dear leader, whatever you choose is fine.
Well, I mean, I want to talk about movies. That is the goal. That's been the goal for 4 years running now.
I'm just here to be a sycophant. Fan?
Okay, that's totally fine. That's totally fine. China is instituting like Uber for citizenship in their country. If you say bad things against the government, you lose points. I feel like this is something they're working on.
Oh, like practice. Yelp
exactly.
For people.
Yelp for people. It determines if you are able to get into the good universities or what kind of jobs you get, so on and so forth. I feel like you are having the same basic idea, whereas I'm the Chinese government and I'm ranking individual members of the Munich Movie Club. And by appearing on this podcast with me to talk about these three movies, it's not going to get you no points.
Okay. Well, give me 5 stars.
I'd hate to reveal my ranking process for human Yelp, the MMC version, copyright Chinese Politburo, but it is star based.
Well,
that's all I can say.
I'm looking.
Are there 5 stars? Are there 417 stars? We don't know.
Okay, all right.
We don't know. But if you get a 90 something, it might be 90 out of 4 figures.
Well, I'm glad we have this ring. System now. It kind of actually reminds me of a college classmate, Kyle Corkhouse,
sure,
who used to play the arbitrarily assigned drinking game.
Sure.
It was always a big winner. No rules, just, whatever.
Yeah, just pure organized chaos around one specific person's eccentricities and preferences.
Yeah, if you let people...
It's a good way to run a society.
Yeah, if you let them know where you stand, where they stand with you, they won't respect you anymore.
That's absolutely true.
You gotta keep them guessing.
That's absolutely true.
And all the best bosses do that.
This is one way to get points in the Munich Movie Club. There are other ways, but am I going to let people know what they are? Of course not.
Am I blowing you again? No. I fell for that 2-3 times. Okay, one was, I initiated, but...
Again, like the podcast participation, it doesn't net you 0 points. But how many points does it get you? That's the process.
You didn't need to write a public review on my wall.
We're refining how we pick the three movies to engender more participation, and we're refining the person ranking process as well. It's all work in progress. So the movies that we discussed in this last trio are The Magnificent Seven, the 2016 version, Mo Better Blues, and The Pelican Brief. We were presented a choice between a trio of Denzel Washington movies or a trio of Will Ferrell movies, the Will Ferrell movies being Casa de Mi Padre, Daddy's Home, and Talladega Nights. Those are certainly, with the exception of Casa de Mi Padre, which is an underseen gem, if I do say so myself, those movies are probably better known than the three Denzel movies, but I think the force of Denzel's personality swayed the group. These three Denzel Washington movies are pretty deep cuts, I think, as far as movies that you think of when you think of him. I selected these three movies because I listened to a podcast called Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor of All Time, period. And I hadn't seen Mo Better Blues and The Pelican Brief, so therefore I hadn't listened to those episodes. This helped me knock out some old podcast episodes. And for that,
well,
it was all worth it.
We're here for you.
Even if our participation was a little down. So Magnificent Seven, the remake of a remake, Antoine Fuqua directs, he being most famous from Training Day. This movie takes an evergreen plot of one-third team-up film, one-third David and Goliath film, and one-third Western, or more accurately, those two-thirds in a Western package, and then attempts to update it for modern audiences, and they do this by diversifying the cast, making it more action-oriented. The Magnificent Seven from 1960 is not a cheap-looking movie by any means. It has a large cast and a lot of extras, but even still, adjusted for inflation, that budget was $16 million, and the budget for Fuqua's version is $90 million. And the result of all that extra representation in the cast and that extra money is a bunch of nothing. It's hard to imagine such a straightforward, easy concept coming out as malformed as Fuqua's version, and with the thin script and the artless direction and a a tone that can be generously described as bloodthirsty and an overlong runtime, this is a bad movie. It's tough to get through, and it does not leave a lot of impression after it ends. I wrote a long D review of this movie on the website, MunichMovie.club. Shane, what did you think of it?
I'm just baffled at what the fuck happened. Like, why did this happen the way it went down? Like, westerns are my favorite genre, but
sure.
What was going on?
It's a great question.
I mean, they're like, hey, we got Denzel Washington.
Two-time Oscar winner.
Yeah, great actor. Hey, let's not give him any personality.
None. Just put him as the blank center of the movie and assemble a lot of one-note to no-note characters around him. Like, there is, in the original Magnificent Seven, and presumably in the original Seven Samurai, that's a monochromatic cast. I doubt the Seven Samurai had a Mexican in there. Probably not.
I feel like... Like
I haven't seen the Seven Samurai, but I doubt it. It would have really thrown the tone off of a period samurai film.
Being very racist.
I'm just assuming. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
very racistly.
The Fuqua included a Mexican actor, a Native American actor, and Denzel Washington lead.
Was it South Korean actor? Because he's in actually one of my favorite westerns, The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
Okay, so he knew what he was doing.
Yes.
Really, he had experience in the western genre. I would totally believe that. I would have no reason to think so necessarily after seeing this movie, because he, like the other minority characters, are, I feel like it's just virtue signaling. Like, look at all these jobs that we gave to underrepresented groups in Hollywood. Like, they didn't actually write characters for them or give them interesting stuff to do.
No, I'm not going to knock them for actually diversifying a cast.
Yeah, I mean, pat on the back, but it doesn't make your movie automatically better.
Right, yeah, they forgot that part.
I wrote in my review that... the Native American character, he just walks up to the party and says, I would like to join you.
He didn't even say that.
He's a character from a video game.
He didn't even say that, yeah. Like,
he's got the bland, no backstory of like an RPG character or the protagonist in a first-person shooter, and Denzel Washington is offering experience points. Yes, I will go and do whatever you need me to do.
Yeah. He's like the vampire guy in Final Fantasy VII. That I just never bothered to get.
Okay,
so I'm like, I just missed him.
Yeah, nothing.
Like, I was like, oh, well.
Probably didn't make the game any better or worse necessarily. There was more in there, but.
I guess, maybe.
Probably not. It was probably just extra. If it wasn't important to the game, it was probably just, you know, hanging out in the margins. Much like this character.
Say, like, you was just like.
He hints at, like, you've seen it more recently than I have. He hints that his tribe told him he had a different path. Is it as simple as that?
I mean, he literally said, the elders of my tribe told me I have a different path. A different path from what? What does that mean? And why is this group of ethnically diverse cowboys like, oh, I got it. That's how I was supposed to be, ethnically diverse. I was supposed to be a liberal's wet dream Western movie.
There is a slot that I can fill.
Wait, you guys don't have a Native American? I'm in.
I can have an anticlimactic fight with the other Native American character in the movie.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, totally unimpressive. He may as well have just been another goon on the squad.
Yes.
Because it's just not a problem at all for this character to take the guy out.
No indication that the other Native American guy was badass other than he shot the fat guy with arrows.
Like, there wasn't a big standoff moment when Chris Pratt was facing off against some other white guy. We're just automatically supposed to bring all this shorthand to these characters because they are of a certain race.
I think what was supposed to happen was...
you have no honor, he says to him as he dies. Well, you're off not fighting for Indians either. You're fighting for this white settlement to continue being a white settlement.
Yeah.
What a hero.
He was supposed to have a closer relationship with Horn. Or is it Horner? Horn.
Who is an Indian killer. Right?
Was. I think he's loosely based off of Liver Eaton Johnson.
Okay.
Which is an old frontier tale about a guy who is his wife was killed by crows, allegedly. So he went out and avenged their murders and killed all the crows and would eat the livers because the crow tribe believed that you had to have your liver to get to heaven.
Now, sure.
This is all complete bullshit.
It's probably.
Some toothless yokel who lived on the frontier.
Sure.
Who probably did beat the shit out of some people, but.
Maybe wolves ate the livers.
So.
It's a tasty organ.
There was supposed to be, I assume in this script, that was supposed to be more that was fleshed out. This guy, his family's killed by Comanche, but then he killed them, but then he came back and was like, oh, you know what? They didn't really do it. It was someone else. And he and the Native American character, whose name I don't remember, like. assume that's what they're supposed to, because they walk off screen. He's about to tell, he's like, I used to have a family once.
Yes.
And then he walks off screen. And like, you're like, what? I was, that was about to be interesting. Because I think Vincent D'Onofrio, D'Onofrio does a pretty good job. I didn't even recognize
him. He is making a choice. He's making choices in the movie, at least. There is actually, well, I don't know if there's anything to his character necessarily, but just the way that he is playing him with like various eccentricities is something. And he's memorable, at least. Although they completely fudge up his introduction as well, where he like won't go with them, but then he goes with them in the next scene.
Yes. No, I don't know why anyone is with this group. Other than Chris Pratt's promised a horse, but then all of a sudden he gets...
Yeah.
Finds Jesus. I don't know.
There's, to compare it to the original Magnificent Seven again, Yul Brynner is the star of that movie, and he has connections with all of the various Magnificent Seven, mm-hmm. but that movie also makes a choice to focus pretty much solely on him and Steve McQueen, who he is has the closest relationship with. And I feel like he was going for that with Denzel and Chris Pratt to some extent, and with Ethan Hawke's character to the other extent.
Yeah.
But it does... The alternative would be that they don't flesh out the other characters at all, which I think the Magnificent Seven original kind of did, in so focusing on the couple main characters. But what they do here is just relying on this racial shorthand, which is certainly not better, and then not making the main characters interesting in any way beyond vague revenge plots. Chris Pratt's, I don't know, nihilism, I guess. Like, he doesn't really give a shit. Like, his bro-ness.
I think this was a good time. You know, I think this may have been written by 12-year-old boys.
Certainly possible.
The characters. Okay, what is this character known for?
Boobs in there.
Well, this guy likes to play cards and does magic tricks. He's really funny.
Gives really ineffective threats too.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt has his gifts. I don't know that an action hero is one of them. I know that he's been in super successful action movies by now, but I just don't think he's credible. Well, he can eat as many chicken breasts and do as many sit-ups as he wants.
He's good in Guardians because he's not taken seriously.
He uses
that to his advantage in the movie. Here he's joking, but then there's also like, well, I just looked at you and then shot a bunch.
Jokes in this movie too. Like, the jokes are so ugly. It's like, you're Mexican. I have a woman at home.
Yeah. That was a really bad scene.
Just so, the chemistry is so terrible. Yeah. The rapport is so terrible.
I was like, I didn't get it. I just didn't get why people were supposed to be friends. Other than Ethan Hawke's character in, I think it's Beyond.
And his gal Friday, or his guy Friday with the knife.
With the knife.
Yes, the Korean actor.
Oh, yeah. Who's another character we have? Okay. An old drunk a sniper. Snipers are cool.
There's something there too,
and
I think.
We should have an Asian who's great with knives and shit. He can throw them.
Yes.
You want me to make a movie?
Some kind of handheld weaponry. It's racial shorthand again.
Yeah.
This is a bad movie.
It's disappointing because it could have been good because there are a lot of good actors
here. It seems like it would not have taken a great deal of effort to make this into a good movie.
Can't talk about the Gatling gun. Did that bother you as much as it bothered me?
If you're a practice sniper like Ethan Hawke and his Asian sidekick is, you should know not to stay in the same position when a Gatling gun is in play. Like, you should take your shots.
Is that
move.
Even how a Gatling gun works?
I don't have a good sense of that.
You can just
don't
break a whole town. Couldn't figure out how the bullets were entering buildings from 360 degrees.
Here's another issue of virtue signaling in this movie. In addition to the diverse cast, none of the horses die.
Yeah.
If you're raking a Gatling gun across a crowded town where there are many horses, there's got to be some dead horses on the grass.
Yeah, like,
but they're all shooting at like a horse rider height.
Yeah.
And at one point,
but also
you see all the horses
buildings.
Obviously corralled into the street. Yeah. I feel like you can actually see where the ropes were cut out of the movie.
Yeah.
It's such a half measure.
I did see one of the horses fall.
Hundreds
down.
Of people die in this movie.
Yeah.
Again, the previous movie takes place on like the Mexican frontier, where there is a sense of lawlessness, and that this could all theoretically be happening under the noses of the government of the country because they just don't give a shit. This is happening in America. In the Old West, sure, but hundreds of people are dead.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Not to mention the whole plan of killing this industrialist who deserves killing and is an evil person. But if I have a problem with, let's just say, Coke Industries, and something happens to David Coke, Is that the end of Coke Industries? No, it is not.
No. To be fair, I did hear one horse fall down and go, oh, God, my ankle.
I would believe that. The camera pans up and it's Vincent D'Onofrio's character just doing voices for all the horses because he's making choices. He's made a choice in this movie. So to bring it back to Denzel, who is not bad. He's just not given anything to do. I do think that he improvs a line at one point where he offers his gun to one of the goons.
Yeah.
Like when they first meet, like he changes the tone of his voice and it's like interjected in the middle of a conversation that he's having. That was a good line. Good scene. Well done, Denzel. You did all you could. But this is like, he's very much placing himself at this point in his career in the old man action movie phase. Why do actors do this? I don't understand.
Because Hollywood's uncreative. They're not creative. They're just,
but why do they say yes? I feel like he is a person who could do whatever he wanted to.
I assume this made money.
I think so.
Which is, as much as you shit on it, there are some, I do have a couple positives. Like, it was, I guess, at least an interesting premise to start with. There are a couple snippets of solid scenes. The camera work I thought was great. Did a nice job on that. It was a delight to actually physically watch the film with my eyeballs.
I don't agree.
You didn't think that was good?
No.
I thought for the most part it was pretty solid. It got some good scenes.
I think this falls in the Game of Thrones category for me, where if you throw enough money at something, it's going to look good. And I think there's money on the screen in this movie.
Okay.
But that's the best thing I can say for that specific aspect. I think the editing and the directing, as far as like geometric space with all these battles and like what's happening where and who's where. No sense of it.
No, it didn't make any sense at all.
We've talked about the editing with like D'Onofrio showing up out of nowhere with no reason for him to say no and then yes.
It's still
beyond him talking weird and therefore being unbalanced, perhaps.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Or why Ethan Hawke came back in the first place. I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
No, and then he's not only is he back to not leave his friends, but he is back to throw down. Like, he is murdering people left and right.
Except for the person.
They're goons.
Except
fine,
for the
them,
immobile but person with the Gatling gun.
Yeah, he's not that good of a sniper. So it seems like that would have been the solution to this problem, instead of like a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
Would have been take him out from a distance. Make the great shot. Make the impossible shot.
As you're dying.
Yeah, sure.
That makes sense.
God.
So, but why wouldn't you make this movie if you're Denzel? It sounds good. Right, you get to work with Ethan Hawke again. You get to work with this director you did make a good movie with. It's a classic movie. You get to work with up and coming Chris Pratt and some other actors.
I don't think that's a draw.
I mean, but isn't this why you say yes? This movie, like, all right, this is something he's never been in a Western.
He's entitled to cash out, certainly, but like, this is a trend. Like, he did this and he did Two Guns with Mark Wahlberg and he did The Equalizer, which I feel like is turning into a franchise, and there are others. He'll do the train movie.
I mean, people
Unstoppable.
Are
going to
keep putting him in movies, action movies, because he's famous. And
I feel like the older you get, the less likely you are to do an action movie.
Usually.
Like in the Honest trailer for the Taken series, they pull a scene out of Taken 3, I want to say, where it's just Liam Neeson hopping a fence. And there's like 10 cuts in it because Liam Neeson cannot hop a fence.
Right.
But they have to like show his face and then show his back when it's the stuntman hopping this fence. Not even hopping, just climbing a chain link fence, pulling himself over it. It's pretty pathetic. You're diminishing yourself when you do that thing.
Yeah, but but he's never going to admit that he can't do it.
Magnificent Seven. Who? Bad movie.
C minus.
It's okay. I gave it a D. I stand by it. A movie has to have no redeeming factors to get the full F, and it wasn't. There were not no redeeming factors in it. As we said, D'Onofrio making choices. Denzel has a couple of good scenes. There's potential here, specifically around the idea that capitalism and success translates into virtue, which they hint at in the opening scene with the villain and then do nothing with.
Right.
And it's disappointing. And this movie sucks. So, Mo Better Blues. And that is our second movie. This is Spike Lee's follow-up to Do the Right Thing. It came out in the immediate year after. You got to think when this came out, like every critic is like looking at this guy, wondering what he's going to do next. As far as Spike Lee's career goes, like this movie is notable for being his first of four collaborations with Denzel, others including Malcolm X and He Got Game and Inside Man, all of which are varying degrees of great to okay. I don't know. Have you seen He Got Game?
I have not.
Okay. I considered that movie, but it is practically a porn.
Okay. I mean, it's pretty high on my list. Now it's higher.
Okay. Yeah. Ray Allen is not terrible in it.
Okay, that's right.
And Denzel Washington scores a basket off of him in an improv scene.
Does it look good?
Yeah, it looked, yeah, I remember the basketball looking all right.
I feel like I could probably score a bucket on Ray Allen.
Aggressive.
I mean, aggressive. Denzel can do it. I feel like I can do it.
I think he tricked him. Like, he thought they were not filming yet. And Denzel, like, checked him the ball, and Ray Allen checked it back in anticipation of an action. And then Denzel just shot.
Well, I have a pretty good move that I have where I dribble the ball underneath my shirt, and I hit it, and it goes around. I don't know if
that's famously Ray Allen's weakness.
Yeah. I don't know if he can handle that.
It was on all the scouting reports.
If you put the ball up the shirt and hit it and spin it around, you'll totally get Ray Allen. Is it a legal move in the NBA? No. But this is street ball, so Ray Allen needs to come to my neighborhood.
The commissioners are never Ray Allen fans anyways, so yeah. They just allowed the rule for it. The second he retired, they were like, no more through the shirt shots.
Yeah. Well, Ray Allen, this is a challenge, buddy. Come down to the southeast side of Atlanta. I'll show you some hooping. I'm done.
Okay. So this is the start of Denzel and Spike's fruitful collaboration. Within a few years of this movie, they're going to team up for arguably the best work of both of their respective careers in Malcolm X, but in Mo' Better Blues, Spike is still figuring out how to collaborate with Denzel. Like, Denzel as Bleak Gilliam, a very stoic trumpet player who just extremely professional, extremely precise in everything that he does, with the exception of his love life and his profession and who he allows to help manage his group. And those, and therefore, the two things that bring him down. Spike's script, even though it constructs this pretty indelible character, like, I think this is a great performance from Denzel. The movie itself leaves a lot to be desired. Shane did not watch this, so I'm just going to rattle off a few quick things, and we'll move on to the next one, most likely.
Yeah, I'm just here to talk shit to Ray Allen.
That's fair. It's been your lifelong goal.
Yeah, finally have a way to do it.
Years of planning come to fruition. Denzel, as I said, untouchable in this movie. However, Spike writes himself a substantial character. I would say he's like third or fourth in the call sheet, something like that. And the character requires a lot more charisma than Spike has on screen. Right Thing is a masterpiece, and he's the lead in that movie. But that movie, there's a lot of an ensemble nature there, and he's just a lot more comfortable, I think, in that movie for whatever reason. I don't have anything negative to say about him there. But here, as a character who is destroying the life of this talented musician, it only makes the movie worse, just because it makes Denzel's character of Bleak Gilliam stupider by keeping this guy around, and every second that you spend with Spike's character is painful. At a certain point in the movie, he gets beaten up by bookies because, of course, he has a gambling problem as well as being just bad at his job. It's a fun scene to watch, like a young Samuel L. Jackson beating the shit out of this character, and then Denzel intervenes, and suddenly it becomes a tragic scene because a character that you give a shit about is being beaten up, which is striking. Like, there's no way that Spike intended for that scene where he is being beaten up to be fun and a pleasure to watch, because it so closely follows more or less the end of the movie. Like, it does ruin Bleak's career. It's whiplash. It's complete whiplash. And it was proof to me that something went horribly wrong in the casting of this movie. I don't understand why he feels the need to cast himself in this movie so much. If you want to be an actor, be an actor.
Better or worse than Tarantino?
Tarantino's scene in Pulp Fiction is a mark on that film's legacy. He should not have given himself that scene and that monologue. It makes it worse amongst, like, if I had to rank A pluses, it might drag Pulp Fiction down a little bit. But it's such a small part of the movie.
It never bothered me, actually, in Pulp Fiction. Like, and, what's the Robert Rodriguez in vampire movie?
Oh, From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes, I actually thought
that's not his movie. He's probably a character. He's probably a person that can take direction if he's not in charge.
Yeah.
I suppose that's true. And I don't have a strong opinion about him in From Dusk Till Dawn, which I think speaks to the level of acting that he's doing in that movie, which is probably fine. I don't remember him as being terrible. I remember the characters being a little much, but that movie is about stripper vampires.
Right.
So that's great. I mean, I think he's very good in Four Rooms. I think he's fine in Reservoir Dogs, and I think he's inoffensive in Django. And
is that anyone where he's got an Australian accent?
Whatever. I mean, that's a choice that he made.
Who's got the better Australian accent?
His character got his comeuppance, much like Spike Lee gets his comeuppance in this movie.
Are you trying to stop me from doing my Australian accent? I was going to do a demonstration.
I'm not super excited to hear
it. What's a good Tarantino line? that I can redo. Just
I'm thinking. I mean, there's the like aversion speech from Reservoir Dogs.
All right. Well, I'll just make up one of
my in which he calls Madonna a dick machine, I want to say.
Yeah, dick machine.
Dick
machine?
Dick. Yeah, that's solid.
Thank
that's
you.
That's a good
Am I word. Better than Tarantino and Django?
The CKs are a good word for an Australian or New Zealand accent, I think.
Spike Lee? That's a hard one. That one sounded
The Lee is
racistly
tough.
Asian.
So I do think Spike actively makes this movie worse in a way that Tarantino never made one of his movies worse. Our last movie in the Denzel trio was The Pelican Brief, directed by Alan J. Pakula from 1993. So John Grisham, I've written my share of high school book reports based on John Grisham books. Maybe Shane has as well.
No.
No?
No, okay. I was more of a Crichton fan.
Sure, well, I did some Crichton as well. Yeah, mixed a little science fiction, a little legal fiction.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a lawyer when I was that age.
That's fair.
I was
actively you wanted to be a CIA analyst.
Yeah.
No, that's Tom Clancy, excuse me.
Yeah.
You wanted to be the Andromeda strain?
I
wanted to be a space virus when I was a kid.
Yeah, that was definitely alive. I'm kidding. Viruses aren't alive.
Viruses are not alive.
I just watched that season straight to things, and I was bothered by it. I was like, all the options out there, you go with a virus.
Which... it's a terrible comparison in Stranger Things. We cannot have this conversation again, however.
I'm with you. I'm here to be with
we
you.
We can talk. I mean, it's a choice. Yeah. Reiser made a choice to say it. They made a choice to write it. They made a choice to let it go in the show.
Yeah.
It's a terrible choice. A lot of people made a terrible choice. It's annoying. So John Grisham, he's a guy. He's been writing like legal airplane bookstore novels for decades now. And I looked this up. Like the four movies that he released in the mid-90s, The Firm, The Client, A Time to Kill, and The Pelican Brief, I've seen all of those, but The Firm, by the way, those made $750 million between the four of them, which is bonkers. Just this is a period in Hollywood when you could release a mid-budget. Like, how much money could The Pelican Brief have possibly cost? Like, $30 million, maybe?
I can tell you right now, they did not put any money in this car scene, so yeah.
Fair enough. But you could make this kind of mid-budget movie. They're probably topped out at, like, $50 million max. And then that could turn out to be one of the highest grossing movies of the year. Like Justice League cost like $300 million. I guess it's bad that is gone. I still like superhero movies, but if you don't, you're shit out of luck. So anyways, back to 1993. Pelican Brief finds Grisham and director Alan Pakula, who directed All the President's Men. They're making a conspiratorial movie at the highest levels of government and far away from the small town lawyers that Grisham prefers to write about in his books and in the movies that his books turn into. Denzel co-stars here with Julia Roberts. They are a reporter, and she is a law student who uncover an assassination plot, which, thanks to Pakula's crack directing, feels like genuinely tense and dangerous. This is a movie that surprised me at the level of investment they got out of me. I expected something decidedly average, and I was pleased to find that it was above average. I thought this movie was a B. I don't know where you were at.
Probably closer to a B-.
Okay.
C+.
Would that have anything to do with perhaps the law school scenes? Because when we talked about the paper chase, whenever that was most of what we talked about. Was it accuracy or non-accuracy?
Yeah, and no, I mean, as silly as they kind of...
It seemed like a very real conversation that could happen in a classroom.
Yeah, if you...
Not having been to law school myself.
Yeah, it's... The subject matter is like clearly like a basic conversation piece of like a first semester student, but the professor being owned is pretty ridiculous.
Do you think he was owned or he just like this is not a scene about what is being spoken about in the classroom?
Yeah, that could be fair. Like,
so as far as the content matter of their discussion,
much, and the content matter was fine, but like, whatever, you're not going to sit there and start getting into what is standing. You know, or
sure.
Whatever. You know,
no,
like
yeah, that would be
ridiculous.
Too deep for
right?
This is
you can rattle off 15 different cases. Well, this is just like and Burgess versus Peterson, blah 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 blah. And you're like, hey, what? Like no one does that.
Famous case of Ray Allen, whose last name is actually Burgess, suing the NBA about the legality or illegality of the through the shirt shot. He was sick of getting burned and posterized.
Yeah. I had
all the way to the Supreme Court.
I had a poster of Nate Knickknack Peterson on my
Nothing.
Wall.
I don't know who that is.
He's the only guy who could do the shirt move.
It was even into his mid to late 40s in the NBA, he was still through the shirting with every opportunity.
It was great. And I had a poster, and it's like he had the you could get like a three different angles. One was him front on, and the two on the sides. Like, is he
a
basketball
complicated
player
move. It's
or
complicated move.
Pregnant man?
Unclear. So One last thing about that scene in the lecture hall. If that scene is about establishing Julia Roberts as an idealistic person, and this movie opens with like culture warriors protesting at the Supreme Court, but then the plot is revealed to ultimately be just purely about dollars and cents, I feel like it's also just more misdirection, which is something I really appreciate in this movie. Like, it would be very easy for the assassin to be some kind of anti-abortion nut or hardcore eco-terrorist. But it is just about money. Like, that's just as interesting and less melodramatic than having it be about these, like, grand principles.
Yeah.
That a lot of these conspiracy-type movies are, you know, occasionally about. It's not about communism or about the fate of the world or anything like that. Like, it's just one guy who'd like to make more money.
Yeah, it was... I feel like for grand conspiracy, which you're going to usually lose me on a lot of those movies.
Of course.
Did a pretty good job. He's pretty good. I mean, but I think it goes to Grisham actually being an attorney by training. So he's going to, you know, fill in those plot holes. Where, like, you know, a lot of times the conspiracies require people to do some really dumb things or believe some dumb things.
Sure.
Or, you know, like, fake the death of a cop.
Yeah, there aren't.
So we can have that argument again.
Fair enough. I don't remember there being so many absurd turns here.
No.
I think it all more or less, if you can get past the introductory assassination of two Supreme Court justices.
Which was, like, to me, that I think that actually, that put me on edge for this movie.
Just because
I could just sit there, I could think about that happening all day, every day. Like, right now, if that happened, I'd be, like, the whole country's just fucked.
Yes, so we take it very, we take it probably too seriously. It's the one part of the government that still works, more or less. Like, results come out of it.
Yes.
Whether you agree with the results or not, like, stuff is happening.
It's usually based on something until we start filling all judicial roles with guys who are bloggers.
Yeah.
But, I might just be having an issue with technology now ruining this movie for me in the past, because she's able to do that research to figure it out. It doesn't seem very impressive where those two would agree on some things. Like, there are thousands of people who do that and watch SCOTUS every day.
Okay. Because, like, it aren't most of the cases these days either, like, 9-0 or 5-4 anyways?
No. Maybe it is like that, I guess. But there's still some 6-3s, you know, 6-2, you know, 7-2. Like, everything adds up to 9.
Sure.
Except for a couple of ones where someone has recused themselves in.
Sure.
So that's where
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, like, everyone can predict Supreme Court, like, almost every single case, you can predict exactly how each justice is going to rule. There are some surprises, but it's just so stupid.
It does seem like the conservative justice that is assassinated. If you took the least charitable view, it's almost like no one realizes that the dead conservative justice is an environmental person.
Yeah, and that seems like such a surprise.
Kennedy died, like, he was appointed by Reagan, but everyone has a good sense of where he stood on, like gay marriage type stuff and abortion. Like, he was generally in favor of both of those things. Everyone knows that about him.
Right. So I guess that's the only thing, but it could just be, you know, maybe it wasn't as studied or focused on in the early 90s. Or I guess this is probably written in the 80s, so maybe it's good to study. But then again, like, everyone who goes to law school is always like, I'm going to study con law. And you take a con law class, you're like, no, I am not.
That's constitutional law for laymen.
It's called law school slang. I got some more up there.
There's no time for full words law school.
Guess this one. Crim law. Criminal law.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's criminal. It's criminal acts, not necessarily what some people would say it's civ or civil acts.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to bore everyone out there with all this.
So, more of Grisham's bias. He does not like big law firms.
Good for him.
There's a lot of movies, and this being one of them, where big law firms are not necessarily the progenitor of bad behavior, but very much the enabler of it. I'm thinking of things like Spotlight and Syriana and Michael Clayton. There's just always some lawyer in a boardroom who is making shit happen. And like The Wire as well, with Maury Levy.
I think he's a small attorney, though. He should be.
By the end, he is like a kingmaker for the town.
Yeah.
Like the whole city.
So, like, I'm with you. I'm with him on being anti-big firm because
There's just a sense of these organizations as black holes.
Yeah.
Of who knows what is happening.
There are layers of people just lying, manipulating. You can't. You're not eventually held responsible for any of your stupid shit you do unless it's super egregious. So, like, if I do it as a solo practitioner, like, that's it. That's my reputation. That's done, you know? But, you know, you go for a big firm and you're representing an insurance company, which, why do you care? It's not your money. It's not your money. Who cares?
We have hit a personal nerve here.
Jesus,
in this movie
I was just yelling about this earlier.
In an early 90s conspiracy movie.
I can only catch so many attorneys lying. Why lie? Why? I'm going to catch you, fuckers, and I don't care. It's so small. God damn it. It's insurance companies.
Speaking of things that are small, Denzel is
How dare you?
Denzel's kind of a non-entity here. He's the co-lead of this movie, but I think he is out-acted by Julia Roberts, of all people, where she is actually selling a state of being where she's being chased by murderers and is gradually becoming more and more paranoid, and she seems believably competent in evading them, I think, and she gets a handful of lucky strokes, but several of her reactions in this movie, I feel, are some of the best work that she's done in her career.
Yeah,
and it's not a career that I'm necessarily a huge fan of. I'm not a big Julia Roberts fan, but compared to Denzel, who is, like in The Magnificent Seven, kind of catching a paycheck, I think.
You don't think Julia Roberts has done that recently?
Of course, of course. There's nothing wrong with, like, I think the one for them, one for me, career path for an actor, where you, like, you do the studio movie and then you do, like, some independent movie that the script speaks to you or whatever, or is working with a director that you've wanted to work with for a long time. I think that's wholly respectable and probably the right way to go about doing things in an industry that is very much about business. But this is very much a one for them, I think. Like, he's not adding a lot to this role. So, to bring it back to our earlier discussion about The Magnificent Seven and about diversity in movies, like, is this one of those longed-for, fabled roles where the casting director goes in and just hires the best person, doesn't necessarily have a race in mind?
Ooh.
Like, I was listening to a podcast recently, and I regret that I cannot remember what movie they were talking about. Oh, Baby Driver, where it would have been very easy for the bland protagonist of that movie to have been a black guy, because it is in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And they go to great lengths to demonstrate that it is in Atlanta, and it would be totally believable that this...
So Atlanta is like a character in the movie.
Atlanta kind of is a character in the movie.
Good. Well, that worked out for Triple Nine or whatever the hell.
It did not. It did not. That came up in my review, which you can read for both of those movies, Triple Nine and Baby Driver, at MediaComovie.club. So, to return to Pelican Brief, was Denzel just the best guy for the role? Did they perhaps seek him out? Is this kind of diversity, and this is a question with an obvious answer, more effective than The Magnificent Seven kind, where your movie does have minorities in it, but they're specifically there because the role is written as a minority? And, like, just the straightforward protagonist of a movie is colorblind in the script.
I mean, I feel like people had to make important decisions back then. I think it's just so hard to go back and say what was the decision in the early 90s.
Sure. And, like, Denzel, I believe Malcolm X is 92, Glory is 89, so he's got his Oscar. He's Denzel Washington in 93. He is who he is.
Yeah, I don't know, but also just a lot of star power there.
Absolutely.
Although I have a theory that no one actually likes Julia Roberts. But everyone else likes Julia
Roberts.
That's
fair. I don't know that people actually like Denzel Washington. I hear that he's kind of a dick.
Oh, and as a person, I mean, as an actor or actress.
People probably like Julia
you
Roberts.
You just questioned it right now.
I did just question. I mean, she hasn't worked in so long, but
I don't.
Could be, she is an actress of a certain age that could be for many different reasons that have nothing to do with her chemistry or lack thereof. So I don't know.
And I don't think she's a bad actress. I don't think she's a really good one.
I think there's a period where she was too cutesy. And I think there's a period where she's too smug. And I think this falls right in the middle of it.
I don't know.
Like, the idea of watching something like Eat, Pray, Love, where it's just a rich woman traipsing around the world and learning things from other cultures, and that's Julia Roberts, that sounds painful.
Yeah, that does.
That sounds absolutely painful, especially like late career Julia Roberts. No chance in hell for that. Yeah. But here, it's just a happy medium.
I think, and this, let's, you know, have a misogynistic conversation.
Oh boy.
I'm kidding. But seriously, I think she's a very non-threatening actress to women. not that I'm going to know what women are thinking, but
sure.
There's nothing not, there's like nothing threatening or interesting about her. She's just there.
Well,
and then she's, I don't know. Like, right.
Here's a Denzel Washington non-answer to that question. Like, they have something of a romance in this movie, but it feels like a very conscious choice to withhold any consummation of that interest. And this might be incorrect knowledge of this movie, but I believe that was his decision. Like, in the book and in the script, they at least kiss by the end.
Yeah.
Whereas he did not want to do that.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting.
I think that's the better choice.
I agree. I don't think necessarily that just because a man and a woman are in a stressful situation together automatically means that the most important thing
is some grab ass.
We should nail each other.
Yeah.
That just always seems false to me in movies.
Hey, you woman. I know I'm sleeping on this couch, but come on, there's some magnetism. I know your boyfriend just got murdered in front of you, but
yeah.
That's a fuck.
She did not just watch Sam Shepard get blown up a handful of days ago.
So...
I hadn't even thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I thought it was actually a good choice for once.
I don't think that's why he didn't want to do it. I think he didn't want to kiss her because he's Denzel Washington and she is a white woman.
Is that a thing, though? Is that a theory on his
acting? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, I do think there are certain things that he won't do as a star on screen that other actors wouldn't do. To get away from the Pelican Brief, I think one of those things that Denzel won't do is like extend himself beyond the stoic protagonist. Like he's portrayed lots of different characters in the lead, but as far as like a scene stealing supporting role, like the first thing that popped into my head was Tom Cruise, Tropic Thunder. He's never done anything like that. He's always at the very top of the cast list. And now, of course, Tom Cruise took that role because he was coming pretty close to like actor jail, where Val Kilmer and Tom Sizemore are hanging out.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And here nor there, I feel like he could have just as easily done that very well-received, justifiably so, Tropic Thunder role at any stage of his career. But again, it's just not something that Denzel has done and therefore maybe wouldn't do. Is that something that's missed? Like, if you're watching a movie and Denzel like were to show up in a scene apropos of nothing and leave the movie after the scene is over... Like, does that just mean you're seeing more of him in more movies? It lengthens his resume, or is it better that he maintains his position as like a true movie star who dominates movies?
I think I'd want him to have these bit parts. I think it makes you a better actor over. It makes you less predictable on screen. It certainly didn't hurt Matt Snodgrass's career when he walked out of the audience.
And, I mean, I don't know that he's done much more after that.
It's true.
Maybe once you poke fun of yourself, no one can take you seriously anymore. Like, was the scene great? Yes, it was. But did it ruin his career?
No.
Can we say definitively no, it didn't? Like, what was his big follow-up performance? Like, we don't really have anything.
That is true. But I think you actually, I know we were joking there about a very inside baseball skit that like 200 people saw.
Very serious.
Once upon a time.
Could have been a star.
But you're right. Like, he's coming out and making fun of himself. Does that ruin your gravitas, as the kids say?
I do think that is something that he has managed to maintain, like a level of mystery. He does. I don't think he gives a lot of interviews. He doesn't really give retrospectives about his career. Like, per Denzel Washington, is the greatest actor of all time, period. Whenever someone asks him about what's your favorite movie that you've done, it's always the last movie that he did. Like, he'll reliably say that. And he also reliably is upset by the question. I feel like that is just an awkward place to be.
Which is, I guess he doesn't like talking about himself. I don't know.
That just might be that might be his process. He only thinks about what he's working on now.
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, I get it. You don't want to wallow in the past. But I don't know. Like, I'd like to see him do something different. That'd be nice just to see it. I mean, even just...
Even
thing.
Like the big outlier from his career, I would say, is Alonzo Harris in Training Day, but he still is the center of that movie.
Oh yeah,
like he's the villain, but he's certainly the most interesting thing to watch on screen. All due respect to Ethan Hawke and Dr. Dre.
Yeah,
and Snoop Dogg. I mean, that movie is lousy with West Coast rappers.
I even I think like the peak of this Denzel not being interesting is John Q.
A movie that I wanted to include in this trio because that is also a movie that I haven't seen, but not streaming anywhere. But yeah. Then that being said, like Mo' Better Blues wasn't streaming anywhere either, yeah. So I don't really have a leg to stand on.
I would like to have rewatched John Q, but...
I really wanted Crimson Tide because I have not seen that movie. Oh. I feel like that's just a very solid mid-90s compartment thriller.
Better than Pelican Brief.
Maybe, probably. That wouldn't shock me at all. That would not shock me at all. I feel like the Pelican Brief, we are off of that conversation, but at least in Crimson Tide, I probably would have been able to distinguish who is who. Like Pelican Brief, I could not figure out who was in charge of the CIA, who was in charge of the FBI, who was like in the Justice Department.
Yeah.
All those characters blended together. I don't think they ever used their names on screen either, which seems kind of admirable to not hold a viewer's hand, but at the same time, you got to give me something.
I know Dear Leader said the conversation's over, but the car chase scene was pretty dumb. Chasing them in the parking lot.
Oh, yes.
It was really dumb. And he crashed into the car he wired.
Yeah.
That's the only time he crashed an entire parking lot.
I mean, I think they did that on purpose. I was being charitable in my head while I was watching. Why did that car blow up? Oh, they must have. Okay.
That was the one they looped around. That was the one that guy crashed into it wired. He didn't run into a single car.
I didn't like that guy's look. I was happy to see him go. He was
annoying. Yeah.
Great in Rome, which you may or may not watch for our next TV recap series.
That was Brian Harmon.
Really dragging his feet. So,
feet dragger.
Away from these three movies, what are our favorite Denzel performances?
I think my favorite probably is one's going to be In Philadelphia.
That's fair.
I was very impressionable. That was like probably one of the first serious movies I ever saw in theater.
I recently watched it and it holds up, certainly. Like Tom Hanks is kind of like a little sufferer in that movie compared to Denzel, who like actually goes on a journey in that film. I mean, Tom Hanks goes on a journey too, but it's to the grave.
But Denzel,
whereas Denzel is like, he's his lawyer in the movie and he gets over his... Not necessarily gets over, but he learns to like interrogate his homophobia.
Yeah, yeah, and it was
and he is venomously homophobic in that movie.
Yeah,
it's uncomfortable through modern eyes how aggressively he is dropping those gay F-bombs. But
I mean, but that was
that
was the 90s.
It's believable. I mean, it's the 90s. Yeah.
I think probably the one I think about the most. Which now I can't even think of the dang name movie where he plays Bumpy?
Devil in a Blue Dress?
No. Where he's like, my man. Damn it. He's like the street hustler.
I'm going to let you figure it out.
Damn it.
American Gangster. Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Isn't
Bumpy the character that dies like off screen as the movie is opening?
Oh, maybe.
Frank something? Frank Lucas.
You're probably right.
He drove for Bumpy.
Oh, okay. There we go. Yeah, we replaced Frank Lucas, but I'm also perturbed that I like that performance so much because it was a real person who, by all accounts, is a legitimate piece of shit human being.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is on his side because he's neither a corrupt cop nor an Italian mobster.
Yeah.
You got to be on someone's side, I guess. And, like, just the Russell Crowe law enforcement part of that movie gets dramatically outshone by the Denzel Washington drug lord part of it.
That's
another movie where he is the antagonist. And,
arguably one of his best movies. I feel like he's a protagonist in that movie.
They give him the Catch Me If You Can redemption at the end where he's like turning the tables on everyone.
Yeah.
And as someone who serves his time and eventually gets out and...
Yeah, but the Catch Me If You Can guy didn't like murder people and facilitate violent killings.
Absolutely true.
Women, which I assume Frank Lucas did.
Maybe. There's... That's fair.
He was real life.
One kind of shitty behavior can very easily lead into another.
So, but Denzel, I guess, speaks to that role. That's where he just does a little something other than just like stoic leading man.
Yes. The stoic leading man, he is that in Mo' Better Blues. And he's also like a sex symbol 100% in that movie too, which I don't think is a role that he often plays. But I could be totally off base about that.
He is he's still a sex symbol.
But it's not a central part of his characters in movies. Okay, I don't think that's fair. Beyond like his just general charisma and attractiveness. You got to give it to Glory, I think.
Yeah.
That's a pretty formidable role. We talked about Training Day. Like these are standard responses, but I do think those performances are pretty untouchable. Malcolm X Did he win the last Mediocrity for Best Actor?
I don't remember. I actually didn't see
I think he did. I believe Mediocrity winner Denzel Washington has another award to add to his surely weighed down mantle, if those awards were real and or meant anything to the person that received them.
The Mediocrities?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he doesn't get one. Ray Allen. Oh, but he didn't watch his movies, so it wasn't eligible.
Yeah, I mean, he lost that Supreme Court case, too. It's just nothing is working out for him. It's just shit after shit after shit for Ray Allen.
Yeah.
The rings hardly sapped his pain.
Yeah.
So, unless there's something else you want to interject, that'll do us for Denzel Washington.
I think that's it.
Okay. Our next trio, I'm happy to announce, for the month of December, will be Culture Clash movies. We will first be watching The Big Sick, followed by Morris from America, a 2016 movie starring Craig Robinson in making the transition from comedy to drama as a man who brings his son to Germany, a movie I have not seen. I can't speak to it, but it was well reviewed, and I look forward to it. And we'll be wrapping up around Christmas time with Dances with Wolves, a movie that should lead to some interesting conversations. So on our website, we have reviews of recent movies like the aforementioned Baby Driver.
Oh,
and
we have a
website? We do have a website, and I banged a whole lot out earlier this week. You got Our Little Sister, a delightful Japanese movie, Unorthodox Family, and Particle Fever about the Large Hadron Collider, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes in advance of War of the Planet of the Apes. That review will be out in the next few months or so. The Beguiled from this summer, the new movie from Sofia Coppola. We're just cranking shit out on our website. Our Stranger Things podcast just ended. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And if you're a little behind on that show, following along with the podcast,
watch it and listen and get angry at their dumb opinions that I disagree with.
I don't think our opinions are dumb. I think our opinions are dead on.
Not dumb, but I disagree with them.
I think everyone is
correct
and accurate. And we were kind of all in agreement on the various highs and lows of that season of Stranger Things. But, you know, if the show wanted us to disagree with each other, then it should have been better. Let that be a lesson to Stranger Things. Be better.
Yeah, you heard it here. So fuck you, Stranger Things, and Ray Allen.
That'll do us for this episode of the Meek Movie Club podcast. Website, meekmovie.club. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Amazon, all that fun stuff. Thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.